Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
James Merrillat of 1043thefan.com. Drop by. He's going to hang out. How you doing, man?
I am doing well. How are you?
I'm doing all right, man. All things considered, I am doing all right. Did you hear any of the first hour that you want to react to?
You know what? I was show prepping.
No worries.
You know, running around, just getting all my information. So I did not catch any of it. You know, I wanted to make sure I came in fresh and prepared.
Gotcha. No worries. You have continued your crusade against Vic Fangio. It's only turned up another degree, another maybe 10 degrees of the hot seat from this past week. You were pretty discouraged the way that I was. Man, Sunday's game against Tampa, who I thought was largely average offensively, made the Broncos tap out. I mean, that just wasn't a competitive contest.
No, you're 100% right. I think Tampa by the end of the year is probably going to be a good team and they're going to be a playoff team. But right now, they're maybe slightly above mediocre. Like, they're good, and you got to play good football to beat them. But they're not a team that is unbeatable, certainly at home. And I know it's different being at home now, but they still had to travel and all that stuff. So you should have a shot in that game. And the Broncos were non-competitive. I mean, they ran six offensive plays, got a punt blocked, and three plays later, the Buccaneers were in the end zone, and it was over. I mean, we weren't 5 minutes into the game, and there's not a soul who was there, whether it was in the stands, in the press box, or a person watching on TV, which was the vast majority of us. There wasn't a soul who thought, okay, they'll bounce back. They got a shot here. I mean, it was over 5 minutes into a football game, and, man, I've been watching this team for 40 years. And I'm sure there's been other games where that's happened, and I'm sure there's been teams that maybe I'm forgetting how bad they were off the top of my head. But, Zach, I'm hard-pressed to come up with a Broncos team that I could say that about, that 5 minutes into a game, I didn't think they had a shot at it. They're bad. They're a bad football team right now, and it's a combination of injuries, bad drafts, bad free agent signings, bad coaching. I don't know, and I tweeted this during the game. What do the Broncos do well right now? I can't really come up with anything. So, it was a discouraging effort on Sunday, to put it mildly.
Yeah, it was. Tampa only scored 5 points in the entire second half. Do we realize that? They scored just five points in the last two quarters, and they won 28-10. And before you joined us, man, if the Kansas City Chiefs were on the Broncos schedule this past week, it would look like 2017 against the Eagles, where you give up more than half a hundred. And I'm not being facetious or funny at all.
No, you're not.
And by the way, it wouldn't just be against Kansas City. If they played Baltimore or Buffalo or pick one of these other teams, the Packers, it would have not been an 18-point loss. It would have been a 28-38-point loss, literally.
Yeah, no, they could have had a 50-burger hung on them easy. And the game the other day, though, the second half reminded me, and, man, it was either a Trevor game or a Case Keenum game, where the Patriots came in here, and they got like a 16-0 lead early. And then it just became Bill Belichick, Josh McDaniels, Tom Brady saying, look, if we don't give them a short field by turning the ball over, this team has no chance of coming back and beating us.
Yeah.
So we're going to go out there. We're going to play fairly conservative. And if we pump the ball away at the end of every drive, we're fine. This game is over. That's what happened in the second half. It wasn't as though, Vic and Ed Donatell went in at halftime and just, really schemed things up on the whiteboard. And boy, they figured out how to shut down Tom Brady and company. The Bucs didn't do anything. And it was by design, because, again, a pick six, a fumble with a scoop and score, something like that, that kind of, gets the Broncos, going a little bit and gives them some shred of hope, was the only way that game was going to turn around. And, as long as the Bucs didn't do that, they were going to go to DIA, hop on their bird, and go home with a win. So, yeah, it was definitely the Tampa Bay just taking their foot off the gas for sure.
Well, James, unfortunately, for where the Broncos are at, and I got a couple thoughts I want to bounce off of you, and that's the only reason I asked you at the start of this segment. Did you hear any of the first hour? Because there's a couple thoughts that I want to bounce off you, and I'll save it for now. But one of the minor bypassing points that I made is that if this group doesn't find the fight and the competitive spirit, the players that are healthy, if they don't find the spirit that they had in week two against the Pittsburgh Steelers, we are going to experience a stretch very similar to 2017. And by the way, that Patriots game that you were referencing, that was week 10, 2017.
Okay.
And that was Brock Osweiler in that game when they lost 41-16. That was a game where Belichick said, yeah, we kicked it at Isaiah McKenzie because he fumbles. That's what he does. It was that game where there was like three special team just gaffes. But during that stretch, the Broncos won their fourth game on October 1st against the Raiders, and they started 3-1. They didn't win another game till the middle of December. My fear is that if this collection of players that are healthy now, and this is another point that I made, James, I'm seeing all the lists online, rightfully so, about how many players are injured, and that story deserves to be told. Absolutely. They got $53 million sitting on IR, but I haven't seen the list that included Bradley Chubb, Shelby Harris, Jarrell Casey, Justin Simmons, Kareem Jackson, A.J. Johnson, Bryce Callahan, Jerry Jeudy, Noah Fant, Melvin Gordon, K.J. Hamler. They were all out there.
Yeah.
They just weren't playing well. And it's up to this group that is still healthy to show some leadership and some competitive spirit, because if they don't, it will very much be a 2017 stretch where they don't win a game for months at a time.
Well, no, you're right. If they don't win Thursday night, I don't know another game on the schedule that they're going to certainly be favored. It's the NFL, and every game, every week we see games that go, the complete opposite of what you expect. So I'm not here ready to predict they're going to go winless by any means, but are they going to go on a long stretch where they have some ugly Sundays? Yeah, for sure. And you're right, and I'm glad you pointed out all those names of guys that are playing, because you can gripe and complain and moan and cry about all the guys that aren't playing. And I get it. There are a lot of big names on there. But, man, you just rattled off the top of your head a lot of talent. And those guys are all out there. They're not getting anything out of them. On Sunday, we didn't see anything from almost every name you just mentioned. And those guys are high draft picks, highly paid, highly talented. To me, that's the indictment of the coaching staff, is they don't get anything out of these guys. But to act like the Broncos don't have anything to work with, even with all these injuries, it is a joke. They do. This isn't high school where if you lose, six starters, now you're having freshmen have to play. I mean, they're still professional football players. They're still tremendous athletes. They're still guys that were the best player on their, Power Five conference college team. They're not out there trying to work with somebody that just is totally outmatched and outmanned. That's just not what's going on. Now, do you have to get a little creative? Sure, but did we see anything creative against the Buccaneers on offense? Of, hey, we got Jeff Driskel. He's a guy who can move around a little bit. Let's take advantage of that. Did we see anything that showed that Pat Shurmur and company decided to play to his strengths? No, not at all. And then Vic Fangio and Ed Donatell of, all right, well, we don't have, Von Miller. We haven't had him all year, so they've had plenty of time to think about this. Bradley Chubb is doing virtually nothing. To get a pass rush, we're going to have to get creative, bring some exotic looks, do some different things. And, man, if we're going to get beat, we're going to get beat, bringing the house and knocking you down. And Tom Brady, if you want to stand in the pocket at 40-some years old and take hit after hit after hit and throw strikes, great. But, man, you're going to be sore when you get on that plane and fly home. They didn't do any of that. They just sit back and play their vanilla and just do what they always do and then just bemoan, well, we don't have the guys, we don't have the horses to get it done. Well, heck, if you have to have a team full of all pros in order to be successful, in order to win games, you're not much of a coach. Like, figure out how to get something out of the guys you do have. And we're just not seeing it. But no, there's plenty of talent on this team. Now, the quarterback position,
that's big, obviously
the most important position in sports, and they're woefully inadequate at that spot right now.
But I also put that on the Broncos.
Sure.
That was never a good idea. We called it out when it happened. And the fact that you needed to rely on that plan so early in the season, it makes it even more of a glaring indictment.
Yeah. No, it does. And look, we went round and round on it because I was in the camp of I don't want the Broncos to have a veteran backup because I think Vic Fangio will go to him. So I never thought Jeff Driscoll was the answer. And I always thought that, hey, if you got to play Jeff Driscoll for 4 or 5 weeks, you're up a creek. Like that was always going to be the case. But to me, the 2020 season, and it was always about you got to see what Drew Lock can do. So I didn't want to get to week 10. The Broncos were, I don't know, 4-6. And Drew Lock had thrown, you know, 3 interceptions in each of the last 2 games. And, you know, Vic decides, hey, we can make a run at that 7th playoff spot if we go with Case or Trevor or whoever.
Right.
Like that was the argument. But sure, I mean, it's having Jeff Driscoll is not a real plan if you have to play him long term. And it becomes even more laughable, Zach, now that after one game, they're going with Brett Rypien, a guy who's never played in the NFL, over Jeff Driscoll, who you gave $2.5 million to. Like, why didn't you just bring Brandon Allen back?
It's so much of an indictment that they've made the move so soon.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't even finish the only game that he'll start. And that just proves us right, like, retroactively. And obviously, that's not what it's about. We want the Broncos to be competitive. But to act like this was ever a good plan is a fallacy. And that's been validated by the coaches themselves and what we saw on Sunday. And we got a break. We're going to get back to it, James, I promise. I have to apologize to you because earlier in the segment, you were referencing a game which the Patriots just, like, punted and were like, screw it. And I said it was 2018. Brian on the RamosLaw.com text line, who texts in every day to this show, so I appreciate you, Brian. He says, no, that was the 2016 game, and he's right. I went back and looked it up. It's a 16-3 win against the Patriots in which Ryan Allen punted 7 times for over 300 yards in that game, just begging the Broncos to do anything.
Yep.
And they finished with 3 points.
That was it. It was like up 16-0, and then we're just going to let Ryan Allen punt the ball over and over and over again. That was the game. Thank you, Brian. I appreciate it.
All right. There's a couple things that I want to get back to, and I am going to call you out. For something that you are playing a bit of both sides. I'm going to call you out for it. But in the meantime, there could be a scenario, James, at the quarterback position for the Broncos that if it plays out, literally could be some of the most embarrassing stretch in a most embarrassing stretch in the history of this organization. And I am not exaggerating. And the scenario is actually pretty realistic. And I'll tell you what it is next. James Merrillat hanging out with me from 1043thefan.com. Stoke will be back tomorrow. We could see a scenario at the quarterback position that if it plays out will be among the most embarrassing windows that this organization has had. Oh, and the fact that it's realistic is the most painful. That this is not like some forecasted, if this, then this, then this, then this. No, this is realistic. James, Drew Lock started week 2.
Yep.
Jeff Driscoll started week 3.
Yep.
Vic Fangio has announced within the last hour that Brett Rypien is going to start week 4.
And he actually said Mark Rypien, but yeah, Brett Rypien.
And we're going to get to it. We're waiting okay, on the good. Audio here. But he actually said Mark Rypien is going to start.
Yep.
And then said, actually, I mean, Brett, I get confused of his uncle. That's the guy they're starting at quarterback this week.
Yep.
So check this out. You got Drew Lock starts week 2. Jeff Driscoll starts week 3. Brett Rypien is going to start week 4. The chances that this goes swimmingly for Brett Rypien is unlikely. Now, I know the Jets aren't some world beaters, but Brett Rypien has never played a down of NFL football before. You could see a scenario where Blake Bortles, if Drew Lock is not ready to play against the Patriots, you could see a scenario where in consecutive weeks, you go from Drew Lock to Jeff Driscoll to Brett Rypien to Blake Bortles, and we're already 75% of the way there.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be four different starting quarterbacks in four games, which is remarkable. Even the year when it was, you know, when they were bringing back Osweiler and they had, what was that, Lynch and Simeon. And, I mean, yep. it was a revolving door. I don't think it was four quarterbacks in 4 weeks, at least not as memory served. I think
it was not.
Somewhere in there, somebody started back-to-back games. It's laughable, and it's hard to believe, except it's just the latest example of just being irresponsible at the most important position in sports, right? Like, nobody really talks about it, but this is an organization that decided to defend a Super Bowl title with two quarterbacks who had never played an NFL game, never thrown an NFL pass, and only taken one snap, and that was a kneel down for Trevor Siemian. Mm-hmm. Now, I think they signed Austin Davis, and he was the third quarterback, and he was technically in the room, but he never played it down here.
Right.
It was Paxton Lynch and Trevor Siemian, and you had a Super Bowl defending team. It was basically the same group other than Peyton Manning. Now, that's a big other. I understand that. But it started then, and it's gone on and on and on since then.
Did you mention Mark Sanchez?
Well, Mark Sanchez, again.
That was the initial plan, was it not?
Okay. It was, and they decided to save $5 million and go with the youngsters instead, which was a mistake, and that's a whole nother can of worms. Mark Sanchez wouldn't have been the long-term answer. I get it. I think he would have been better to start that year, and if you're, you know, four or five games into it and it's not working out, go with Siemian, go with Lynch, you know, at that point be experimental.
Right.
But out of the gate, that's silly. Last year, right, they're in this situation where if Joe Flacco gets hurt, they're not able to go to their young, QB of the future, their second round pick, because he's on IR, which was a mistake. And he's backed up. So instead, Joe Flacco is backed up by another guy who's never taken an NFL snap. So when you got to go to a different quarterback and you got to go to an inexperienced one, you're having to play Brandon Allen for 3 weeks instead of Drew Lock, which is just the height of incompetence.
Yeah, that was bad.
Oh, no, we're going to top that this year, though. Now, you go into a game in week three where your quarterbacks are Jeff Driskel and Brett Rypien. That's who they had suited up on Sunday. You'd be hard-pressed to go through and find a worse duo in the league, certainly in Broncos history. I mean, and it just happens over and over and over. I mean, I can understand, Zach, that sometimes injuries happen at weird times, and, you know, you get caught off guard, right? You were thinking a guy would come off IR, and you got this, like, 2 weeks where you're kind of in no man's land and you got to patch it together. I get it. But this is now the fifth season where they've had either no plan or a terrible plan. I'm not sure which is worse, to be honest, at that position. And at some point, you know, somebody has to be held accountable for the fact that that's what they keep trotting out there and that's what they keep betting on of, yeah, we'll go with this plan. It'll work. It's disastrous. And four starting quarterbacks in 4 weeks would be the epitome of it. That's just irresponsible.
It would be the ultimate, and there's a couple people that get mad at me for saying microcosm too much. That right there, if we have a four weeks consecutively where a different quarterback is starting, that would be the ultimate microcosm of the last, what is turning into like a half a decade here.
Yeah,
and it's really, really unfortunate that this is turning into the new normal. And I want to apologize. I said earlier Brett Rypien hadn't played a down of NFL football. Hopefully you know what I meant. Meant starting a game. That'll take place for the very first time in just over 48 hours, believe it or not. All right, we're going to take a pause on that. Oh, by the way, what I said I was going to call you out for.
Yeah.
Really quick. You were getting on the Broncos this past week for not being competitive, but in the previous week where I did, amidst the circumstances, tip my cap to the competitive spirit, you were crushing that type of opinion the previous week, saying that we were given participation trophies, but then the next week when they weren't competitive, that was your main drilling point.
Well, sure.
To that,
I mean,
you say what?
If you're going to go into the pecking order, I mean, it's all about winning, right? That's number one. Number two would be, hey, you lost, but at least you were competitive. And then worse than that is losing and not being competitive. So, yeah, I mean, losing a close game and at least showing some heart and, you know, being in it and making it interesting is a step above, you know, being done 5 minutes into the game. Absolutely. I would agree with that. but it's still not good enough. It's still not, well, hey, you know, they took the team that went to the AFC title game last year all the way to the fourth quarter. Let's give them some orange slices. Or, hey, they played up against the Hall of Fame quarterback and they were only down 5 in the fourth quarter. Okay, that's better than getting blown out at home by Tampa. Sure. But it's still not good enough, and it's still not something that, you know, to use an old Tom or old John Fox thing, that's not a pelt on the wall, right? That's not something you should feel good about.
It was part of the story that I thought deserved to get told. In addition to accepting, yes, this isn't good enough, yes, you lost, this is the NFL, but I thought that was a part of the story that deserved to get told because they did show tremendous fight.
Okay. I mean, I guess it's part of the story. Was it tremendous fight? I don't know. They're getting paid.
They had the ball. You know? They had the ball with a chance to win on the road. You know, when all the odds were against them, both from matchup standpoint and injury standpoint. Look, it's kind of semantics. I like calling you out because you gave me some grief for giving them orange slices. But the following week, you saw what real a lack of competitive spirit looked like. And those were two very different things week over week.
I will give you that. I will give you that. Of, hey, look, if you give me the option between the week 2 Broncos and the week 3 Broncos, I'll take week 2 all day long, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I think I saw a tweet from you. And here we go. I might be calling you out again. I think I saw a tweet from you that I wanted to reach through the phone and put my hands around your neck if I have it right. All right. Okay. So more spirited debate between you and I next. We're going to hear from Vic Fangio in just a couple minutes on making a change at the quarterback position. James Merrill out of 1043thefan.com dropping by, hanging out with me. Stoke will be back tomorrow. James,
I feel like this is Festivus and you're just airing all your grievances with me.
Well, I haven't talked to you in about a week, so things build up with you rather quickly. Did you suggest, and I don't have your tweet in front of me, but I think I remember the tone of it. Did you suggest that the Nuggets missed their window?
No.
Okay.
No.
Explain to me your tweet, if you don't mind, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, what I suggested was that, you know, next year or the year after, none of that is guaranteed, right? So you hear a lot of people saying, hey, they got to the Western Conference Finals this year. It's just onward and upward, and next year will be even better. Like, we don't know that the trajectory is going to go that way, right? Like,
sure.
And when I said it, I was looking at it as a fatalistic Nuggets fan. So in 1994, they become the first 8 seed to beat a 1 seed when they knock off the Sonics.
Yep.
LaFonso Ellis blows out his knee in the offseason playing pickup basketball.
Yep.
Mahmoud decides he's not going to stand for the anthem. That turns into a big thing, and he's kind of blackballed from the league. Mutombo leaves for the Hawks in free agency for nothing. And this team that everybody said, man, they're going to be good for a long time to come. I mean, I remember listening to Dick Enberg and Steve Snapper Jones say that ad nauseum throughout the second round series against Utah. Never really did anything again. So, look, I think this team is better than that team. I think this group of young stars is better than that. But you just never know what's going to happen. I mean, the 09 Nuggets, then the next year, George Karl had that team rolling. I think he was the coach in the All-Star game. I think they were the best team in the West. And then he got cancer and had to, you know, take a leave of absence. And Adrian Dantley took over and it fell apart and they lost in the first round. And then it just unraveled. So, look, I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer. I'm just saying when the moment is there, when the opportunity arises, you gotta pounce on it because you don't know you'll be back there next year, right?
Like, the thing is, James, if I just jump in, I think they did. I think they did do that. Like the thing that you're not sure if it's going to come again, I think they did it because I say that to say they weren't going to beat the Lakers. Like that was not going to happen. They lost 4 or 5 games. They were not going to beat that team 4 times in a 2-week period. I think them crossing through that threshold, that window that you hope that you maximize when you have it, was in the semifinals against the title favorite Clippers and getting to the Western Conference Finals. I thought they actually executed on that window for what we're talking about in the here and the now.
Maybe. And you're probably right. I guess I just look at the Western Conference right now. And look, LeBron is amazing, and Anthony Davis is a great player. But the rest of that team kind of, they're pretty mediocre, pretty average, right? Like, that might be the smallest hurdle the Nuggets will face during the Jokic-Murray era in the Western Conference Finals. Because the Warriors are going to be back. I mean, that team with Steph Curry and Klay Thompson back and Draymond Green, that's essentially the same team that won titles before Kevin Durant got there. So they're not going to just be, they were the worst team in the league this year. They're going to come back and be a title contender. The Clippers, obviously, they're not resting on their laurels. They fired Doc Rivers. They're going to add some pieces. So that team's going to continue to be someone to contend with. The Lakers, they don't appear as though they're going to go away. So, everybody just kind of thinks, well, as the Nuggets just keep improving, they'll be fine. Well, everybody else is working on it, too, and is improving. You know, the Blazers were in the Western Conference Finals last year. This year, they barely get into the playoffs, and they get bounced in five games in round one. It can change in a hurry. If they win game two, could they have won another game? Was it unlikely? Yeah. I picked the Lakers in five, so I'm not going to say I thought the Nuggets should have won or could have won. I'm just saying I'm not sure they're going to have a better opportunity to go to the NBA Finals than they had this year. You didn't have to go on the road and play in L.A., right, where you got Jack Nicholson courtside and you got the refs being impacted by the fans. And, I think being in the bubble actually made it easier. You didn't have road games in hostile environments.
I don't know about that last factor, but keep going.
I just think they had an opportunity that may not come along. And I think it's really easy, to make yourself feel better about, hey, the season came to an end with, well, this was a step and next year's going to be even better. All right, I just have been following this team long enough to know they're like, Peter from Family Guy just tumbling down the stairs when they try and take that next step. So I was disappointed that they weren't able to go further because I'm not convinced they're going to be back at this stage with this good opportunity. Again, I'll believe it when I see it.
Okay. Well, I think you will see it. All right. I think you're maybe a little bit jaded from the past, and that's totally understandable because I don't want you to hold, one roulette spin doesn't have to do with anything of the previous spin. And when you're talking about this group, I would ask you isolate this group and Tim Connolly's leadership as a snapshot in time unto itself. But I get why you would, be a little bit jaded. But I'll say this, James. I think that the way you're talking is actually the way they're talking about with the Clippers. They're talking about the Nuggets that way. Like, we missed our opportunity. Look at this Nuggets team that's coming back. I think that when you talk about these other Western Conference teams, a 35-year-old LeBron James, is he going to come back and do it at 36 and 37 when this group is entering their late 20s? I have my doubts about that. You look at a team like Houston. Could they be blown up and already moving on from their head coach? I look at Jeremy Grant, who's 26, Nikola Jokic, who's 25, Jamal Murray, who's 23, and Michael Porter Jr., who's, can't even have a beer yet. Or, yeah, he can. He's 22. But this is the best, I think, core that this organization has ever had. I think they're all relatively on the same page from an age standpoint and a trajectory standpoint. So I think the rest of the Western Conference is looking at the Nuggets as a problem that has just arrived and is not going to go anywhere for the next 4 to 5 years.
I don't disagree with any of that. And I do think it's a better core than they had in the mid-80s when they got to the Western Conference Finals one time and that was it. I think it's a better core. As much as I like Melo,
mm-hmm.
and as much as I like Chauncey, I like this group better because they're younger and they got more years ahead of them to try and make this happen. And look, this is kind of how it works in the NBA, right? It's the Pistons had to get past the Celtics and then they won titles. Bulls had to get past the Pistons mm-hmm. and then they won titles. Like, it's supposed to go that way. You're supposed to have to kind of
climb. It's a climb.
Exactly. And so I'm fine with that, but and maybe part of it too for me, Zach, is I want to make sure the organization is not resting on their laurels of, okay, you got to re-sign Jeremy Grant. That has to happen. But what are you going to do to add other pieces, right? Like I think the way Jokic plays and the way Jamal Murray, especially in the bubble, turned into a guy that, man, he can beat people off the dribble and break down a defense as well as really anybody in the league, which, frees up guys for kick the ball out and you got open jump shots. They need, you know, someone who can just stand out there and knock that down shot after shot after shot. Kyle Korver type of a guy.
Yeah,
probably
they're they're missing that guy. J.J. Redick.
Right,
you know,
exactly.
They are. I saw the stat that on uncontested three-point attempts, so a hand's not in your face, uncontested threes in the Western Finals, the team shot 26%. That means you're missing 75% on uncontested threes. It's not good, and it needs to be addressed. And I'm guessing Tim Connolly will do just that in the offseason. We have got to take a break. Vic Fangio is making a change again here at the quarterback spot, a new starter for Thursday Night Football. We'll hear from the head coach next. Just a couple minutes ago, Vic Fangio spoke to the media, and during that Zoom session that we've got accustomed to here over the course of this pandemic, he addressed the quarterback position, and would Jeff Driskel start on Thursday Night Football the week after being pulled, and this is what the head coach said.
Yeah, we're going to start, Mark. I mean, Brett. I keep calling him Mark at times because of his uncle. But we're going to go with Brett. But we do have the ability to mix Jeff in there some in the game if we feel like we need to.
Wow. There's a lot there. One, probably got to get the quarterback's name right. Probably.
Yeah.
Two, Rippon's going to start. But Driskel could be sprinkled in there to discuss this further. The one and the only former All-Pro Chad Brown drops by. Chad, we had Drew Locke start week two. Yeah, Jeff Driskel start week three. We got Brett Rippon starting week four with Blake Bortles waiting in the wings to potentially start for week five if it doesn't go well for Mark/Brett Rippon. What do you make of how just sideways this has gone so quickly?
I think we can go back, you know, a couple years ago and remembering the Broncos had, you know, three quarterbacks on the roster, and each guy started at least two games during the course of that season. And I thought this is probably as bananas of a quarterback situation as I can imagine. And now 2020 rears its head, and the most banana year of all, the Broncos quarterback situation gets even more bananas. Possibly four starters in four games. It's hard to believe Brett Rippon will perform well on Thursday with a short week, his first start. So I anticipate Blake Bortles being the starter the week after that. It just shows how poorly they have done at stocking, addressing, and dealing with this position.
Chad, obviously they're in this position in part because of injuries. You're right. They haven't stocked that position by any means. So as soon as somebody gets hurt, they're without a plan. But it would be, and I've been as critical of Vic Fangio and John Elway as anybody, but it would be unfair to not look at these injuries and say, hey, they've had a lot of them kind of pile up. But when you look at it, how much of an excuse is that for this team? Or is it, you know, we always hear next man up. That's the cliche. But is there a point when it becomes, hey, that's just not feasible? It's just too many injuries to overcome?
I suppose there's always going to be a line someplace, James, where that's the case. But I don't think this team is there just yet. Going into this game now with Elijah Wilkinson being out, but the first three games of the season, you had the starting offensive line that you planned with coming out of training camp. Injuries did not affect that starting offensive line after training camp started. So, yes, there are some arguments for that, but there's other places you can point to and say, well, this group isn't performing well. It's got nothing to do with injuries. It's approaching that territory, to be, you know, honest, but it's not quite there yet for me.
Chad Brown stopping by here while James Merrillat hangs out in a place of Brandon Stokley, who will be back tomorrow. Yeah, Chad, this is a tricky one. This is a tricky one because the Broncos are the most banged up team in football. They really are. They have the most amount of a player salary sitting on IR, over $53 million sitting on IR. Dallas is second in the league and they're nearly $20 million behind the Broncos. But at the same time,
there are a bunch of healthy players out there as well. Guys like Bradley Chubb and Shelby Harris and Jarrell Casey and Justin Simmons, Kareem Jackson, A.J. Johnson, Bryce Callahan, first-round pick Jerry Jeudy, first-round pick Noah Fant, former first-round pick Melvin Gordon, second-round pick K.J. Hamler. There's two different sides to the story. Yes, they're the most banged up, but also, Chad, these guys that are out there and healthy just flat-out aren't playing well.
They really are. We saw flashes from Shelby Harris this last week.
Sure.
But you ran off a list of guys, and I could say for all those guys, we've seen some flashes, but, you know, lots of times where there was nothing there at all. So, you know, one sack doesn't make, or I guess they took Bradley Chubb's sack away, but one sack doesn't make a season. And, you know, we need a little bit more consistent production, not just from him, but from that entire list of guys you ran down. You know, talk of the offseason was Justin Simmons, and does he deserve to be, you know, paid as a top play-producing safety? And we've seen him get beat a number of times this season. So even guys who were in the conversation as being one of the best at his position in the league has underperformed as well.
Chad, this is a defense that just doesn't seem to make anything happen, right? They very rarely get to the quarterback. They very rarely force turnovers. It just seems like they're kind of playing this bend but don't break and not playing very aggressive defense. Like, you played on some great defenses, right? I think of, you know, Pittsburgh and coming after people and just terrorizing quarterbacks. Like, what is something that Vic Fangio, Ed Donatell could do that, hey, yeah, they got guys that are hurt and Bradley Chubb's coming off an injury and Von Miller's not there, but what do you do to try and generate pass rush, generate some turnovers, get just something going on that side of the ball?
Well, I think you can try to get something going, but obviously, you know, defense is always, each defensive call, you're essentially calculating in your head the risk-reward ratio when you want to be aggressive. And you can certainly bring guys and be aggressive, but then at some point, Michael Ojemudia gets locked up in a one-on-one situation out there. So that's not the position you want to leave him in over the course of a ball game, you know, 10 or 15 or even 20 times. So you can be aggressive, but you have to pick your spots and recognize where you are going to be attacked. So, yes, if you want to get aggressive, then just make sure you have a safety over Michael Ojemudia so he doesn't get beat down the field. He can be much more aggressive on some shorter routes, things like that. So it's difficult with the, you know, revolving cast they have, with the number of injuries they have, to suddenly redesign this defense and become, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's not what they were brought here for. That's not how this defense is really designed. And it certainly would be very difficult to call this defense in that way, considering the number of injuries and the youth and inexperience, particularly in the secondary.
You hear the voice, you know the voice. It's local legend, former All-Pro Chad Brown stopping by here. Chad, I was of the mind, just speaking for myself here, I was of the mind going into this thing that there's no way that Vic Fangio would not be back for year three. Like, it just wasn't going to happen. He's going to come back. The Broncos have had too much change at that position. They're looking for some stability there, and it would have to look inept. Like 2-14, 3-13 type of scenario for Vic to be back in year three. Well, turns out that it could look like that. It could look like the Broncos picking in the top five, but there's also the injury factor. How does John Elway go about evaluating Vic Fangio throughout this season and into year three? And what do you think the prospects are that he makes it to year three?
Well, if you, those doomsday scenarios you laid out at the beginning of your question are the case, maybe even John Elway won't be the guy figuring out what to do with Vic Fangio, if that is the case, where we have another season of complete ineptitude and no progress anywhere. Yes, if Drew Locke is able to come back from injury sooner than later and they're able to win some games, and you are John Elway and you somehow see that arrow pointing up towards the end of the season, the Broncos are playing better. They're getting some guys back from injury. These young guys are gaining experience and being coached up and are getting better each and every week. Yeah, then I think Vic Fangio has a complete shot. But if the young guys don't get better, if veterans decline, if your guys who you think of, or at least Bronco fans think of as playmakers, aren't out there making plays, yeah, then I think that situation explains itself. There's not a whole lot of discussion to be had. You had this team for an entire another season, and we didn't make any progress. You know, for the, you know, the example people have been using a lot with the Bronco injuries has been the 49ers. So for Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch to be able to go to the owner and say, yes, the record's not great. Our quarterback got banged up. We weren't able to finish the season with him. But we found a way to make our team better. We made our program better. We have gotten guys, young guys, gained experience. Guys who were out due to injury got stronger. Guys who replaced those guys got more playing time. If it's a situation like that, where clearly any smart football person can observe things have gotten better despite the record, then I think you got a shot.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 104.3thefan.com.